Hello and welcome to Bunny's First 11. I'm here with Graham Runyons looking back on his career, and this is benefit season. And Graham, we've already talked about your test debut, but your second test appearance was also an important one for you.
Yeah, it was, I suppose, an extra special one, really. I remember my first, my debut, I got picked and played at Lords in only a two test match series, and I didn't realise the second game was actually at Durham. So, of course, we got the first one out of the way, which is a little bit of relief at Lords, at the home of cricket, and then obviously making that long journey from London to the North East, and it was I suppose an extra special one being at the ground which I've played all my career.
Yeah, I guess when people like Don Robson and Jeff Cook first set up Durham as a first class county, this was the kind of the occasion they were dreaming of, not just a test match but against a real heavyweight test country in West Indies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what the club had done, I remember thinking at the time, I suppose I can look back now and think at the time that it was a massive game. It was one of the first games that Durham had, and to obviously be involved with that and kind of give something back to the club, I suppose that's the way I looked at it, because I remember at the time I just wanted to go out there and perform as well as I possibly could, and it was kind of hard to believe that I was there, and I was kind of playing in front of the team. And I mean, that round of applause that I got from the from the Lumley end, that massive cheer that I got was amazing. I'll never kind of forget that, really.
And as well as being important in its own right, as you mentioned, this was the second match of a two test series, and the next test match was going to be an Ashes one, so I guess you wanted to really make your mark.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been the type of person that you want to do as well as you can in every game, in every session, and I suppose every time you get the ball in your hand, and it was no different, really. I was very much in a zone where I just wanted to play, I just wanted to enjoy myself. You know, it was only your second test match, so in a way, even if I'd my mentality at the time was, even if I'd done badly, they couldn't really drop me, because there was only two games, so that would give me a little bit of a run. I mean, that was, I suppose I look back at it now, a little bit naive and a little bit of wishful thinking, but you know, it kind of worked. You know, that I think my performances in the two test matches, and especially at home, where I was probably a little bit more nervous than normal, just purely because I wanted to do so well. My family were on the doorstep and watching, and obviously familiar surroundings. It was a massive moment, and obviously when it comes to the cricket side of things, there's a few things went my way and a few things didn't. We talk about Chris Gayle hitting me for some massive sixes, but that's what the West Indies can do, really. I suppose a little bit unpredictable.
Yeah, and I guess you're probably under a bit of pressure, because quite unfairly over the course of your career you've been seen as this sort of Chesterley Street specialist. So I guess whenever you're an international bowler bowling on your home ground, there's a lot of expectation that you'll be, you know, one of the chief weapons.
Yeah, I mean, I still class myself as, although I was getting to a stage in my career where I was gaining a lot more experience, and of course I was becoming a bit more reliable, as I was still quite, in my eyes, I was still quite young. I mean, especially in the test match arena, playing on my second test match. But you know, we had the coach and Andy Flower just, you know, asking me like, what's the wicket going to be like? What's the conditions? Where's the rain coming from? What's this? And of course, I was nervous. I didn't really know what to say. And of course, I was just trying to be ultra positive, really. And you know, it worked out well in the end. You know, I enjoyed the game. We had a day rained off, but in the end we won the series, and we had the champagne, and it was absolutely freezing. Now, to be honest, I remember the West Indies turned up, and they were on one of the days it was freezing, and they just had no interest in playing, really. And that's sometimes what you get when you play against the West Indies.
Yeah, as you say, the weather was a real talking point, and partly because of it, you weren't involved at all in the first couple of days. I remember that first day was particularly cold, and England ended up over the course of the day racking up 302 runs for two, so you'd have just been sat on your backside watching most of that, and then the second day it rains.
So. Perfect 2 days,
exactly,
really.
Exactly, part-time job.
from a bowler's point of view, it was a perfect couple of days, really. I remember after the day's play, and I had some of my mates came to see us, and of course nobody at that time, you know, you had Kevin Peterson saying, oh well, why are we coming to the North East to play, and it's miles away from the home of cricket in London, and of course Strauss, Cuckoo, or Miles miles away, they all had tickets that I could use and give to me mates. And I suppose at the end of the day, they were all enjoyed the hospitality at Durham, and they had a great day. But of course, I was like, well, it was you want to get involved in the game straight away.
Yes.
And you know, I'm sure like a footballer, you want to touch the ball and get involved. And you know, we warmed up, and obviously the second day was rained off, and I was champing at the bit. I was desperate to kind of get involved, and I suppose the way it goes as a fast bowler is that you're thankful for days off, and we put in a pretty solid batting performance, obviously scoring heavily in that first innings and putting ourselves into a strong position.
And probably one aspect where you were perhaps glad not to be involved. Ravi Bapara was out late in the day. He made 100, and a night watchman was needed, and Jimmy Anderson was sent out.
Well, I remember there was a discussion. They were saying, "Oh, well, who's going to go out there?" And they said to me, "Bunny, do you fancy it?" And I said, "Oh, well, I'll kind of do whatever you want, really." But I knew in tongue in cheek, I was thinking, well, bearing in mind I got a first ball duck and I didn't see the ball at all against Fidel Edwards, and he was bowling at absolute speed of light. So thankfully, I must have went to the toilet or something and tried to avoid the conversation. But Jimmy had his pads on by the time I come out, and I was thinking, oh, thank goodness for that. And he ended up getting out there, and he was bowling at Cook, I think it was, and he was bowling 80 mile an hour. And then to Ravi Bapara, he was bowling. To Jimmy Anderson, he was probably bowling 94 mile an hour, absolute rocket. So I was thinking, oh, I'd rather Jimmy than me, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I guess as a fast bowler, it was an ideal situation when you did finally get in. 569 runs on the board. I think that's the most runs ever been scored in any match at the Riverside under those conditions. And I guess runs on the board is something you always want.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially at Durham, you know, people always say, you know, that's another one of the questions, like, what's a good score? What's the wicket going to be like? And I mean, the Test match wicket at Durham is obviously slap bang in the middle, and it generally plays well. I mean, obviously, the Test match grounds generally want the games to be going the whole 5 days. I think the West Indies obviously just bowled the wrong line of length, really, on that wicket. It's very much a pitch-up wicket and get the ball to move off the seam, really. And the West Indies just didn't quite pitch the ball up as much as they could have, really. So, and I think we obviously with Jimmy Anderson being the best swing bowler potentially in the world, certainly at the time he was certainly in England the best swing bowler, going back a few years, and he was phenomenal. I remember it swung. It was cold, but it swung, and you know, pretty much unplayable, really.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he took three wickets in the first hour, and I guess as a young bowler, you probably watched Jimmy and learned an awful lot just from, I don't know where you were standing, at mid-on, mid-off, or wherever it was. But
yeah, well, I remember standing at mid-on, and I was trying to pick his brain about what he's going to do, but you know, he very much gets in the zone, and he was swinging it both ways, and away to the lefties, and you know, away from the righties. So he's just got that knack of producing you know, wonderful spells. And I think that day, I remember, you know, thinking, you know, it's great to watch this. I want to be involved with it more.
Yes, because I guess Jimmy, probably of all the bowlers playing that day, it was probably the one you'd most look to emulate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you know, for my style of bowling, you know, a skiddy kind of pitched up, he's exactly what he. What I want to kind of emulate, really. It's what I want to try and be. You know, I've always said, you know, if I do half of what Jimmy's done in his career, then you know, I've had a pretty good career, and obviously hasn't quite worked out that way. But equally, I've you know, I've kind of learned a lot of things from the best, and he's, you know, he is England's best bowler, and I suppose I'm kind of proud that I've played for England and the same side as him.
And as we discussed in an earlier podcast, you managed to take five wickets at Lord's, but I guess, you talked already about the reception. I guess to get that first wicket when you got to Jerome Taylor out, I guess that must have been a special moment for you.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those moments, you know, where you sometimes don't, you just want to soak up the atmosphere and kind of enjoy yourself. And I just remember it being cold, but I felt good. You know, I think I got into a spell. So I've always said to anybody, you know, you get into your spell and you warm up and you get yourself going. And thankfully, you know, the captain just let me kept me going, really. And once you're in the spell, and you don't want to stop really, because A, you'll get cold, and you know, B, you if you feel confident and comfortable in what you're doing, then you just want to keep on going.
Yes, and with all the rain about, I guess when you manage to bowl West Indies out short of the follow-on mark, I imagine it was a fairly straightforward decision about putting them back in.
Yeah, I mean, well, you had obviously Strousey and Andy Flower that were talking about what's the weather going to be like, and they were asking me, you know, where's it normally come from, and of course, as a bowler, you always look at the follow-on, you always think, oh, don't follow on, because you like to put your feet up, but of course, having them two days, day one and two, rained off. The bowlers having their
not
feet
involved,
up. Yeah. We basically had a great opportunity to try and win the series there and then, and you know, thankfully it went that way, and we bowled beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, the West Indies, as we all know, have been going through a bit of a transitional period the last few years, the last couple of decades, really. But when you look at the scorecard and you look at some of the names on it, Chris Gayle, Ram Naresh Sarwan was in brilliant form, especially against England at that time. Shiv Narayan Chanderpaul's record against England was amazing. It was a pretty formidable batting lineup you were up against.
Yeah, it was. We had, I mean, obviously Sarwan was one of the big ones, really. But you look at the top of order and you think that, you know, Chris Gayle, you know, what could he potentially do if he's on song? I think the tactics throughout the two Test match series was just to kind of bowl on his hip. If you've got the skill to try and get the ball to go away from him, he can't score. You know, any kind of width or anything straight, he'll generally try and hit straight back over your head. And I remember in that second innings, I came on the ball and he kind of ruined me figures a little bit. You know, he had two monster sixes. Out the ground straight at Durham, you know, which were big hits. But then I eventually got him out, so it was caught Andrew Strauss, kind of rose a little bit. I was delighted. The second innings, the two wickets that I got, especially Gayle, were more meaningful than the first innings, I think, because I felt as I settled down. Obviously, I got into the fight a little bit more because Gayle started hitting me around a little bit, but I just wanted to try and get in there and kind of show everybody what I was about.
Yeah, and just describe to us what it's like to be playing on the winning side for your country on your home ground in front of all your friends and family.
Well, I mean, I remember that there was nobody really there. It was because it was freezing again, and my family were there, and I think throughout my career I've been given an unbelievable opportunity by Durham, and for me I felt as though I'd kind of done Durham proud, and that's what it was all about. Of course I was delighted that I got a few wickets and I was picked to play for England, but for me playing at your home ground was just something that I was immensely proud of, something that I didn't think I would ever do.
Yes.
Of course, you always got that ambition, and you always think, well, if I take enough wickets and I bowl well enough, I've always got a chance of playing for my country. But playing for your country on your home ground and doing well and winning the series is going to say it's very much a cliche, but a dream come true.
Yeah, and I guess when the Riverside was first built, obviously there was the ambition to get Test matches and big Test matches there, but to then have yourself and Paul Collingwood, two homegrown players playing there, it was really what the whole Durham project, to use another cliche, was all about.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, you go through your contract talks, you know, with Dave Hawker, and he was very, very honest and very much, you know, we want to produce Durham cricketers that are going to represent England, and that's always been their philosophy.
Yeah,
and I look back at it now and I think to myself, well, that's amazing to have that. To have a chief executive that's willing to put money in and back you. I mean, there was times where I'm going away from this test a little bit, but there was obviously times where he thought, you know, these guys maybe aren't good enough. Mm. Young lads coming through, but ultimately that when you perform for your country on your home ground and you're doing well, that he must be very proud. But also it's a case of, I suppose, a little bit of relief taken off your shoulders, because you think to yourself, well, he's backed me a lot and I've gave him what he wanted, really, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and I guess when you look at the Riverside, I mean, when you first started playing, it was still being built around you, wasn't it? So for it now to be a really top class international venue must be something that gives you a lot of satisfaction.
It is, yeah. I mean, still a young county, we won a lot of trophies, we've got a great kind of morale and stuff in the dressing room, and most importantly, I mean, I know that the ground and everything's fantastic, can still improve, can still get bigger, it can still be one of the best grounds in the world, but what Durham still do is that they haven't forgot about the homegrown talent. You know, we've got a lot of guys over the years that have won trophies, and you look around that change room and people who have put big performances that are from the area, from the northeast, and people who are very proud, and even the guys that come from overseas understand that. I've always said it's like having an extra player, having guys that are from the northeast and so desperate to do well, and I think that's still credit to the club and to Jeff Cook and also the players. I think they deserve credit for wanting to keep on improving and getting better.
So to look back on this series as a whole, because we've already talked in an earlier podcast, which you can listen to if you haven't yet, about the Lord's Test match when you made your debut. Two Test matches in, as we said, you've got the excitement of an Ashes series to come. Did you feel that you were, I know you won't say you felt you were established, because we've kind of talked about this before, but did you feel you're giving yourself a real chance of competing for a place in that Ashes series?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was slightly guilty of looking ahead, you know, because ultimately people kept saying, oh, well, this is the build-up towards the Ashes. It's important that England perform well, you know, England should win against the West Indies comfortably, although they're a good side, there's still a lot of good players. In English conditions against the West Indies in the cold weather, people were saying, oh, this should be comfortable. Mm. And it worked out being comfortable in the end. But for me, I was just thinking, well, I'm very naive. I'm just playing for my country and I'm loving it. If that opportunity is to play against the bitter rival that comes, then that would be amazing. But I suppose in the back of my mind, I did always think, oh, I could play against the best, like say your Pontons and stuff like that, and show people how good it would be. Because players do talk, they do say, oh, we're coming into an Ashes summer, everything's magnified, which it is. But I think for me, I was just loving there and then playing at home. I think we might add a couple of games in between the series, and then obviously going towards the Ashes summer, I suppose.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you.
That was episode 6 of Bunny's First 11. Hope you enjoyed listening. Tune in 2 weeks' time to hear about the day when Graham Onions was denied 10 wickets in an innings by his own run out. This, of course, is Graham's benefit year, and if you want to find out more about the various events that are taking place to raise money for Graham and his charities, visit www.graham.com. GrahamOnionsBenefitYear.co.uk. Thank you and goodbye.